God's work was done. The trance was broken. The memory fled. His own memories rushed back. He was in Egypt, a nation for which he had no passport or visa. He was caught. He almost gated away. But then it finally dawned on him that the person was talking. The sunlight was dazzling. He could hardly see. And he must have been deaf, for now the voice swelled and faded. It was English. He knew the voice. He squinted. He shaded his eyes. The face came down to be directly in front of his. She was angry. Hermia. Hermia had followed him here. Stupid, stupid, stupid! Didn't she know he was doing something important, something vital? How did she dare to interrupt him? Drink this, she was saying. He looked down and saw that she was holding a bottle of water, Evian. He didn't like Evian. She had the cap off. She jammed the mouth of it against his lips. It hurt. His lips were dry and chapped, split. He looked at the top of the water bottle. There was blood on it. Dehydrated. That was one of the words she said. He opened his mouth and tipped his head back and let her pour water into his mouth. He had to work at swallowing. It was as if he had forgotten how to do it. No, he was simply waiting for Loki's kinetic memory to kick in. He was waiting for Loki to remember drinking, but Loki hadn't drunk anything. That's because Loki's whole conversation had only lasted an hour, but Danny's attempt to remember it had lasted much longer, starting over again and again. He succeeded in swallowing. The water came down his throat so painfully that he realized, I have gone a long time without drinking. Hermia was gone, but he still held the water bottle in his hand. He tried to lift it to drink more. He couldn't remember how. He bent over and touched his cracked and bloody lips to the plastic lip of the bottle. The water didn't come upward. But he was able to hold it against his lips as he straightened his body. This brought the bottle up with him. Water flowed from it over his lips. He made his lips and tongue work and swallowed some of it. This time it felt better. But then it went down wrong and he coughed, choked, dropped the bottle. Even as he continued to try to cough out the water that had gone down his windpipe, he felt around for the bottle. Why can't I see it? He asked himself. Everything's so bright. Then there were hands again. Hands on both sides of him, picking him up, raising him to his feet. It hurt to unwind his body, to stand up. His legs would not support him. His legs had no feeling. How long had he sat in the same position without moving? They were talking to each other. Two women. Hermia again. Vivi. The other gate mages. His friends. They were both angry. They were both worried. But they were speaking in language, and he was avoiding language. He didn't want to hear language because that would distract him from... No. He wasn't remembering anymore. He was no longer in the trance. It was good to have language now. He needed to hear what they were saying and understand them.
He's not hearing us, said Vivi.
Tell me what I don't know, said Hermia.
We have to get him to Naples, said Vivi.
There's no gate to... Oh, Naples, Florida. Let's just concentrate on getting him back through this gate to the house he left from. Danny staggered. His legs were beginning to get feeling again, an ecstasy of pins and needles, an agony of pain in his long, unmoved joints.
He's trying to walk, said Hermia. He was just staring at the cave?
Makes the Narcissus story make sense, said Hermia. Forced to stare at the same spot forever.
Only not his own reflection.
How do we know what he was seeing? What was I seeing? Can I remember anything? Was this all wasted because it didn't enter my own mind in a way that I have any hope of making sense of? They got him down the sandy, rocky slope to the gate, and suddenly they were indoors. Hal's bedroom. Was that really the last place he had been? It didn't matter which had been last. There was a gate from Hal's room to the cave in Egypt, and that's all that mattered. Hermia had found it. Then she had gone for Vivi to help her, chaining from gate to gate. Hal was there. He swore, tried to help. Danny should have been able to walk easily.
He should have been healed of everything by passing through a gate. Certainly the physical pain was gone. The feeling in his legs was back. But he was still having trouble walking.
"We're getting him back to his own house, dear," said Vivi. "You were a great help, but we've got it from here."
"You're sure that nobody made him do this?" asked Hermia.
"He was completely normal," said Hal. "For Danny, anyway. He had this project he was doing. It had something to do with Loki. He had to go to the desert, and we had to dig out the cave. It didn't make a lot of sense."
"But you don't think anybody else was controlling him?" asked Hermia.
"How would I know?" said Hal. "For all I know, somebody's controlling you." He was standing between them and the gate back to Danny's house.
"You're such a dear," said Vivi. "Please don't worry. The gate already healed him. But he's still not functioning properly, so we're not sure what's happening. If we take him to a hospital, they'll find nothing wrong, and we'll have to explain why we brought him in."
"I'm okay," said Danny to Hal. "I'm just having trouble using my body."
"He's like a beast mage who got lost and is heartbound," said Vivi.
"Apparently, judging from his motor skills, his heartbound is a drunken slug."
Hal stopped blocking the way. They got him to and through the gate. Back in his own house, Danny wouldn't let them take him to Naples.
"No reason to go there," said Danny.
"We have to rehydrate you," said Vivi.
"Going through a gate doesn't replace the water you lost. A day and a half in the desert sun, not to mention a night in the desert.
What were you thinking?"
"I was doing research," said Danny.
"Into near-death experiences?" asked Hermia. She was tasting water from a glass in Danny's kitchen.
"You drink this stuff?"
"Buena Vista's finest," said Danny. She handed him the glass, and he drank it down in one long, sloppy draft.
"I can't believe that your third-degree sunburn has turned into a tan," said Vivi.
"I think of all the lotions and hours and tanning booths, and all I needed to do was get a savage sunburn and go through a gate."
"Do you have any idea how you terrified us?" demanded Hermia.
"Suddenly nobody can find you. Marion and Leslie have no idea. Nobody knows. Until Vivi finally thought of asking your high school fan club."
"My friends," said Danny.
"You are the world's only gate father," said Hermia, "and you don't have the right to disappear without telling anybody."
"I told my friends," said Danny, "and I was only going to be gone for a few hours."
"At least 36 hours, said Vivi.
"I didn't know," said Danny.
"You could have died," said Hermia.
"Do you understand that?
What drug did you take?"
"No drug," said Danny.
"Don't lie," said Hermia.
"It took forever to get you out of that trip you were on.
Were you hallucinating?"
"Not half well enough," said Danny. "Instead of being mad at me, do you want to find out what I was doing? I warn you, in order to do that, you'll have to actually listen to me."
"Oh, you're telling me off?" said Hermia.
"You do a foolish, stupid—"
"Hermia," said Vivi. "Let's listen to him and find out whether he was foolish or stupid."
"Now you're on his side?" demanded Hermia.
Danny and Vivi looked at her in silence. Hermia stood up straight, took a deep breath, and flopped down on the couch beside him. Vivi pulled up a kitchen chair.
"So the old woman gets the straight-back chair?"
"You just went through a gate. You feel fine," said Hermia.
"You know I have Loki's gates inside me," said Danny.
"You captured them, yes," said Hermia.
"But now he's given them to me. So we talk."
"You and Loki?" asked Vivi.
"In a way, maybe. But I think I'm just talking to his gates. They obey me now. But they're still part of him, so maybe he knows and maybe he doesn't. It doesn't matter. There are things in his memory that I need to know, and he's not here. Plus, if I asked him, I don't think he'd tell me. He doesn't seem really eager to teach me."
"But you can talk to the gates?"
"I don't know how it works," said Danny. "Have you ever heard of anybody giving their gates to somebody else?"
"That would be like giving away your out-self," said Vivi.
"Yes, I've heard of that," said Hermia. "Old family legend. Two friends who were so devoted to each other that they became each other's heartbound."
"But it isn't like that," said Danny. "He's not riding me, and I'm not riding him. He isn't controlling me. He isn't the man-mage."
"Can you make his gates?" asked Hermia.
After what happened with the Wild Gate, I wouldn't dare to try. But please, please let me tell you what I learned while I can still remember it.
Learned? Asked Vivi.
I was there to act out the kinetic memory of the time when Loki learned some great secret from a Christian hermit in Egypt. A Coptic speaker, but a scholar all the same. A collector of ancient Egyptian lore. Secret stuff that isn't in the inscriptions. It isn't in the books of the dead. It isn't anywhere. It's just known. And he told it to Loki, and the gates can't give it to me in language. They can only help me recover Loki's mental state when he learned it. Do you understand?
I don't think you understand, sweetie, said Vivi.
I don't, said Danny. But let me talk it through, because it was working. There at the end, when you shook me, I was finally getting it, after starting over again and again.
Sorry I saved your life, said Hermia.
Please, please let me tell it! He almost cried with desperation.
He's asking you to shut up, dear, said Vivi.
I know what he's asking.
If you don't want to listen, said Vivi sweetly, then will you please leave and let him tell me?
Hermia buried her face in her hands.
It's going to be a jumble, said Danny.
I feel it slipping away like a dream. It's about the Ka and the Ba. The Ka is the in-self, the Ba is the out-self.
Everybody knows that, said Hermia.
I didn't, said Danny.
Shut up, please, Hermia, said Vivi.
Her voice sounded so sweet that it was clear she was murderously angry.
And it's not the same. That's what was so hard, said Danny.
We think of the Ka as being tied to the body, part of the body. So we send out the Ba into our heart beasts, into our clants, into our gates. But neither Ka nor Ba is part of our body. Neither one.
That's absurd, said Hermia.
Then she clapped her own hand over her mouth.
This is what Loki heard that made him so excited and frightened, said Danny.
I remember how he felt about it. I remember him understanding this. The Ka and the Ba are bound to each other. Together, they're both the thing we actually are. The body is just a dwelling place, a tool set. It has a life of its own, a mind of its own, but it isn't us. Any of us. Mages and drowthers alike. We are Ka, we are Ba. We are not these animals that we wear.
We're listening, said Vivi.
Sounds very Gnostic, said Hermia.
No, it doesn't, said Danny. It doesn't sound Gnostic at all, or Coptic. It sounds like the thing that made Loki close all the gates.
If the Ka and Ba aren't part of our human body, said Vivi, then where do they come from?
From the world of the Bell Mages, said Danny.
In other words, said Hermia, from heaven.
Danny clamped his hands over his ears.
Please, please don't pollute this. Let me say it first. Let me say it before you start trying to bend it to fit whatever shit you Greeks think you already know. Did any of you go closing gates?
No.
Loki did, so shut up and let me try to remember why.
Sorry again, said Hermia.
From the world of the Bell Mages, said Danny. It was a gate from their world that first turned these hairless apes into humans. But it was also these bodies that gave them the powers we turn into magery.
No, said Vivi.
I mean, I thought the powers came from the Ka and Ba.
That's the thing.
Everybody has a Ka and Ba. It comes into the body when we're born, or whenever. It comes in. But in the process, the body has an interface with the Ka and the Ba. When mine came into me, when Loki's came into him, that's what I mean, that's what I remember. When Loki's Ka and Ba entered his body, it fragmented his Ba into all his gates. That's when he became a gate mage. Body plus Ka and Ba. You see? There's no magery without the body.
So far, this is so exciting, I can see why you nearly died to learn it, said Hermia.
I haven't gotten to the exciting part yet, said Danny.
It's in the book of Revelation. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven.
and the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceives the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him.
I thought you said this was ancient Egyptian lore, said Hermia.
Sounds like the King James Version to me, said Vivi.
The devil, Satan. That's the bell mage. He was cast down. That means he was sent through a gate to Middlegard. But he wasn't put into a human body. He and his angels were sent here as naked Ka and Ba.
They pondered this. So did Danny. I feel so much of what Loki understood slipping away from me. Now I don't even know how much of this is what he concluded and how much of it I'm making up right now, trying to make sense of it.
Just go ahead, said Vivi. I'm finally beginning to see why this matters.
I'm not, said Hermia.
Bell Mage is not a man mage. There are man mages, and what he does is very similar to man magery, but he isn't in a human body. He's bodiless. But think what the devil keeps doing all the way through the New Testament. He possesses people's bodies, he and the other devils, his angels, you see. Jesus was always casting them out.
I thought that was just schizophrenia, said Hermia.
Or multiple personality disorder, said Vivi. That's the only thing today that looks like what the Bible describes. But there are all these bodiless Ka's and Ba's around. The Bell Mage is their boss, the big guy, the main enemy.
That's all Satan means.
Don't bother telling gate mages what words mean, said Hermia. So the Bell Mage hates us all, because our Ka is joined to a body and it changed us, gave us these powers. If we learn how to use them. The ability to use magery is hereditary, tied to the body. But that's why he wants to take possession of the bodies, take over, get the power.
But they aren't joined to our body the way we are they? Asked Vivi.
No, they aren't. They don't get magery of their own. They get inside us and boss us around and get the use of our magery. That's the danger of the Bell Mage. He's not a guy who sends his Ba into other people the way a man-mage does, persuading you, changing your perceptions. No, his whole Ka and Ba climb into you. He wears you like a puppet. He makes you use your powers to do his will. But when you die, he doesn't die. In fact, he loves it when your Ka gets separated from your body because then he's in soul control.
So why doesn't he just kill you and take over? Asked Vivi.
That's the thing. The ancient Egyptians believed the Semitic gods could animate dead bodies. That's why they emptied out the brains and internal organs of the people of great power and put them in the canopic jars, so that the body wouldn't work, so that the Bell Mage or his minions couldn't animate your corpse and continue ruling in your place. Embalming wasn't about living forever. It was about making damn sure you stayed dead.
But can they? Asked Vivi.
That would be zombies.
No, said Danny.
The hermit called that superstition. The Bell Mage can't control a dead body unless he's already in control when the Ka leaves. People believe what they believe, right? But the Bell Mage needs to take control of a living body, and he wants powerful ones. He wants mages. Then he uses their magery.
So when he possesses somebody, you have to kill the person he possessed? Asked Vivi.
That seems really final.
It doesn't even work, said Danny. The Bell Mage isn't dead. You can't kill the Ka or the Ba. They don't die. I mean, the ones truly attached to human bodies die, but that only means they're cut loose from the body. The Ka and Ba are still alive. That's why we can still hold on to the gates of these mages who've been dead for 1,000 years. They're severed from a Ka that's still alive. Somewhere. But the Bell Mage? He didn't really have a body, so he's not changed by the death of the body. He just goes on to another.
You're saying that these Bell Mages are the only ones who reincarnate?
I don't know. That's not the way they discussed it. I don't know what happens to regular people who die in the regular way. This is a memory, so I couldn't exactly ask questions, said Danny. And here's the thing. The Bell Mages were really bad at this at first. They aren't man-mages, they aren't any kind of mage, so they don't have powers the way we do. What they have is a lot of practice. They've been diving into people, getting whatever control they can for 10,000 years. Even Loki hasn't lived that long. So the smartest, the best of them, the Bellmage, the enemy, the great dragon, that one is the most powerful, the one that has acquired the greatest skill. He's learned ways of getting inside people that are far more powerful than any of the other castoffs.
So, what Loki realized, said Hermia, what made him close the gates, said Vivi,
was the realization that the dragon had finally figured out how to attach himself so firmly to a person that he could ride him through a gate.
Oh my, said Vivi.
Think about it. The presence of a Bellmage inside you, being possessed, that's a disease, isn't it? Passing through a gate should cast him off.
But people holding hands with other people can take them through a gate, said Hermia.
Holding hands. Two people with their own bodies. But this extra, this rider, this possessor, he gets cast out. What do you think Jesus was? Healing people, casting out devils.
Oh, you're saying he was a gate father? Asked Vivi.
This isn't from the hermit. We're away from what Loki learned. The hermit wasn't going to say anything that denied the divinity of Jesus. Let's get back to what Loki knew. He realized that the Bellmages were learning how to attach to people in such a way that they could go through gates. I think that's what's really going on with that passage from the Library of Congress. That Bellmage had taken possession of a gate mage. The Loki of that time didn't realize what was going on. He thought that the gate mage he saw in the body was his enemy, but it was the Bellmage inside him. So when the Loki of that ancient time fought the Bellmage, he actually killed the poor sap of a gate father that the Bellmage had possessed. The Bellmage himself never left this world. He couldn't actually pass through a gate. He could use the power of the gate father he was controlling to make gates, but he couldn't go through them. And sending him through one threw him out of the body.
This isn't what you remember from Loki, said Hermia.
No, sorry. No, it just makes sense now, that's all. And I don't remember. I mean, I didn't find out why Loki knew that the Bellmage of his time was getting ready to go through gates. The dragon was probably riding a gatefather at the time, so Loki ate all that gatefather's gates. Not killing him. That made the gatefather useless to the dragon. He'd leave him then, see? Because he was powerless. But he would just have found another gate mage, or he would have gotten into anybody and then gone through a great gate and magnified his power, and so...
So Loki ate all the gates and kept eating them, said Hermia.
Until we brilliantly came along and made a great gate after all.
And put a wild gate out in the world, said Danny.
I have so totally screwed up.
No, Loki screwed up, said Vivi. He should have realized that someday there'd come along a gate father who was even more powerful than he is, and he'd eat his gates. He had to know it.
Maybe that's why he woke up from the tree he was living in, because he knew I existed.
Danny stopped himself.
More speculation, more guessing. What we know is this. Loki realized he had to close all the gates to keep the dragon and his followers, these loose kaws and baws, from taking over everything.
I'm still not getting it, said Vivi.
So they can use gates.
I get it, said Hermia.
As long as using a gate stripped them out of you, all you had to do to cast a devil out of somebody was to pass him through a gate. But if they can stay, then nothing casts them out except death itself. Whoever they take over is possessed till they die. And the dragon or his devils, they don't die when the human dies. They just find another powerful mage to possess. Human life is ruled by these guys forever.
Human life is over, said Danny.
Only the Bellmages have a life. Everybody else is forced to be their puppets, to be spectators in their own lives.
So all these years that Loki has prevented great gates, said Vivi, these Bellmages have been possessing people, and because there were no gates, nobody could get rid of them.
True, said Danny. That's why it's all about the great gates. When Loki did it, Westall was still free of the Bellmages. They had never been able to make the passage. Till then. So Loki kept Westall completely free of the Bell Mages. And even here, he kept all the mages weak by preventing their passage between worlds. So the Bell Mages could never get control of any real power. For all we know, they've been leaving mages like us alone and concentrating on the people who actually run this world.
Stalin, not Odin, said Vivi. Hitler, not Jupiter, said Hermia.
But now, imagine Hitler with the power of a Tempester or a Tide Father or a Stone Father. One who's passed through a great gate. Because just supposing Hitler was really a Bell Mage possessing this Austrian painter dude, then Hitler didn't really die in that bunker in Berlin in 1945. The poor sap he was riding died. But the dragon just cut himself loose and went in search of somebody else.
So maybe we're fighting all the monsters of history here, said Vivi.
No, Loki was fighting them, said Danny. And I just wrecked everything. I just lost him his war.
Nothing's lost yet, said Vivi.
And there's also this, said Hermia. I think it's all mared.
Danny looked at her blankly.
What are you talking about? You think I got the memories wrong?
I think you probably got them exactly right, said Hermia.
But just because one ancient man said it to another ancient man, and let's remember, one was a crazy Christian hermit living in a cave, and the other was Loki, for heaven's sake. Just because they believe it doesn't mean it's true. But just because you don't believe it doesn't mean it's not true.
Look at how you got all this information, said Hermia. You put yourself into a hallucinogenic trance. You were sitting there in the Egyptian sun, baking, not drinking, not eating, not moving, just locked in place, having hallucinations while conversing with whom? Why, crazy Loki's outself. Do you see how absolutely unreliable this is?
No, I don't, said Danny.
Loki's a smart guy.
Being smart and being a loon aren't mutually exclusive, said Hermia.
You're smart and you're a complete loon.
No, he's not, said Vivi.
We just saved his life in the desert because he was catatonic in the hot sun. Please find me a definition of lunatic that doesn't include that.
Danny had no answer to that. He knew she was wrong. He knew that what Loki learned was right. Or at least he trusted that it was right. But maybe he only believed it because he had worked so hard to get at the memory.
Don't let her talk you out of this, said Vivi. She doesn't know anything.
No, but I am attached to the rational universe, said Hermia.
Not meaning to give offense, but Vivi, you spent your whole life convinced you were a gate mage without any evidence at all.
But it turned out that I was, said Vivi.
But you believed without evidence, said Hermia.
It doesn't make you a reliable judge of weird theories like this.
Don't you get it?
Danny's probably completely right about what Loki learned. Only he was a loon, learning from a loon, and Danny's a loon, using a lunatic process to recover their lunacy. And we'd have to be loons to take it seriously.
Since you're the expert on lunacy, said Vivi, just what do you think should happen?
I think it's time to let the families use the Great Gate, said Hermia. There's no reason to keep people from passing between worlds. There are no Kas and Bas that take possession of people's bodies. There's no dragon waiting to pounce. He doesn't exist. It's from the craziest book in the Bible, for heaven's sake.
Danny pressed his palms against his eyes. I am so tired, he said.
You just put yourself through torture, nearly to the point of death, said Hermia.
I'd say yes, you need a nap.
I missed a whole day of school, said Danny.
That's why we knew something was wrong, said Vivi.
Your friends got worried, and so they had the girl with the cleavage look up your records in the office and call me.
I thought you guys were already looking for me, said Danny.
I was, said Hermia. I just didn't know where to look.
You mean that it didn't occur to you to ask a drowther, said Danny.
Hermia shrugged.
But my drowther friends, they're the ones who actually took action, said Danny. They're the ones who saved me.
What are you doing in high school, Danny, asked Hermia.
What is your obsession with drowthers?
It's time to let the families through the Great Gate and restore the proper order to the world.
Danny looked at her, filled with dark despair.
That's not how you used to talk. Maybe I finally realized that the world was no more screwed up when the gods were running the show, using the power they got from passage back and forth with Westall, than it is now, when scientists and engineers put the instruments of slaughter into the hands of drowthers. Let me think, said Danny. I don't mean to be rude, said Hermia. Yes, you do, said Vivi. I don't want to be rude, said Hermia, but sometimes truth is rude. You've been playing at high school. You've gotten all sentimental about drowthers. But look at your friends, Danny. They're appalling human beings. And now they worship you, yes? You rule over them. Only what a pathetic little band of worshippers you chose for yourself, don't you think? Was that really the best you could do? Danny could hardly bear it. A part of him was furious that she would judge his friends like that. And a part of him saw her perspective and wondered if she was right. If he wasn't just like all the other mages, exploiting the worship of drowthers. If that was true, then they weren't friends at all. Just tools. He was just using them. The way he had used Hal and Wheeler to help him dig a cave. As if he had a right to command them to take hours out of their life to go to Egypt to dig sand, just because Danny was a gatefather. I've reinvented all the worst features of the snobbery of the families, and I did it in the name of trying to be a regular high school kid. On the first day, I'm putting people through gates and taking charge of their lives as if I had a right. I'm as bad as any of them. Hermia was looking at him with a weird combination of concern and smug superiority. She is not my friend, Danny realized. But Hal and Wheeler, Xena and Lorette and Sin and Pat, they're my friends. Even if I'm a lousy friend to them, they're good friends to me. Screw the families. Screw the great gates. Whether Loki was right or wrong about the dragon or Belmage or Satan or whatever, he was definitely right to close all the gates and keep them closed for 1,000 years. You know what, Hermia, said Danny. I like my friends. They don't try to get me to treat other people badly just because they're not as powerful. You're such a drowther, said Hermia. You used to feel the same way, said Danny. I grew up. In the past couple of weeks, asked Danny. Oh, I see where we're going with this, said Hermia. You think I've gone through a sudden personality change. You think I'm possessed by the dragon. What an interesting suggestion, said Vivi. I never would have thought of that, but now that you bring it up... You do realize, said Hermia to Danny, that if you now start thinking that anyone who disagrees with you must be possessed by Satan, that is the road to genuine lunacy. It never crossed my mind that you were possessed, said Danny. Not by the Belmage. I think you've been talking to your family. I think they found you even though we removed the tracers. I think they've talked you into being with them. Hermia's silence, along with a slightly reddened face, were enough of a tell for Danny to know that he had hit it aright. I'm sorry they got to you, said Danny. And I'm sorry that you agree with them now. Hermia regarded him in silence. Well, this is awkward, said Vivi. Not really, said Hermia. He's saying that if I had held my current views when we first met, he would never have accepted me as his partner in this project. Danny shook his head. You didn't have these views, that's all I know. But you also helped me learn to control my abilities. I haven't forgotten that. But we are not friends now, said Hermia. We're friends who disagree about something important, said Danny. No. I think that by talking down your drowther friends, I actually elevated them in your estimation, and lowered myself. Danny couldn't disagree. That summed it up pretty well. Hermia walked to the sink and refilled Danny's glass. As she did, she spoke. See, Danny, you hate your family, and Vivi doesn't really have one. But I love my family. I can't erase my old loyalties. I can't turn against them. You did, though, said Danny. Because I was excited about finding real gates in the world, said Hermia. Now I'm over the first rush of excitement. I'm back to my true self. Back under the thumb of your family, said Danny. Whatever, said Hermia. I made a deal with all the families, said Danny. No, you imposed a diktat on them, said Hermia. Which you agreed to. Because you're the gatefather and I'm not, said Hermia. But I always thought you were wrong. Vivi gave a quiet little hoot of laughter. You really have a talent for revising history, kiddo, she said.
I've gone from dear to kiddo, said Hermia. I'm in a death spiral here, aren't I?
I'm sticking to the deal I offered the families, said Danny.
You think you're so egalitarian, but look how you're treating me, because you're the gate father and I'm just a lock friend.
Maybe you're right, said Danny, but that's the system you prefer. By that system, yes, I'm the gate father and you're the lock friend. Again the silence as she stared at him. She dashed the glass full of water in his face. Then she walked to the gate that led to Washington, D.C., and went through it. Danny wiped the water from his eyes. Think I'm rehydrated yet? He asked Vivi.
She'll change her mind, Danny.
I don't think so, said Danny. To her, I'm just a kid from the North family. The Illyrians think they're better than everybody, especially Norths. I don't think she's going to change her mind and come crawling back to try to put things back the way they were.
Well, so what? She can't make gates, and you can.
Danny wanted to cry. I kind of like to keep my friends.
Like you said, sweetie, she never was your friend.
Yes, she was, said Danny. She was a great friend. But she changed her mind.
All right, but love is not love if it alters when it alteration finds.
That is one of the most convoluted lines of poetry ever written, said Danny.
But sense and sensibility made me cry and cry, said Vivi.
Dead squirrels in the road make you cry.
You're taking this all very calmly, said Vivi.
Because it doesn't matter what Hermia says, Vivi. The Bellmage is real. Loki is right. That's the real war. All this bull about the families going through great gates, that's just stupid. I need to learn how to eat gates the way Loki did. I need to get to Westall and pull the gates up after me, just as he did.
Please don't tell me that this will involve another trip to Egypt, said Vivi.
At least bring somebody along to pour water over your head from time to time.
You know what, said Danny.
I'm going to eat a couple of peanut butter sandwiches and go out for a run. I've got to make sure my legs still work.
So you're going to stick with the high school thing a while longer?
It's either high school or figure out how to save the world, and whom to save it from.
I like it when you say whom, said Vivi. You actually know the rules.
I don't know any rules, said Danny. I don't know anything. Inside him, Loki's gates were murmuring to him. It's all true, they were saying in their wordless way. Don't doubt it. True, true, true. The dragon is real. The dragon wants to go through a great gate to Westall. Keep him out of the great gate.
All I can do is muddle through as best I can, said Danny. It's what we all do, said Vivi.
Chapter 18. Clear Memory. What no one knew about Wad, what he barely knew about himself, was how lost he was. You don't live 1,000 years inside a tree without losing something. And what Wad had lost was his own story. Once he had been driven by a terrible purpose, something so important it was worth locking himself away from human life and devoting everything to the single task of taking away from any gate mage in Westall and Middleguard the power to make a great gate. In doing this, he diminished all the mages and consigned generations of human beings to suffering and death for lack of the power of healing that the gate mages had held. But, waking from the tree, called from it by something he did not recognize or understand, Wad had wandered with no purpose at all. A girl had fed him and given him clothing, so he did not freeze to death or starve. A baker woman had taken him in, and so he had dwelt in a castle and learned to care about the things that castle dwellers care about, kings and dynasties. He had followed his body's inclinations and fallen in love with a woman of beauty and ruthless power. Only gradually had he discovered that he had some moral principles, things he would not do. He would not murder King Priard's mistress and their children. He would not rip the baby from Bexoy's womb in vengeance for her murder of the child they had made together. It implied that once upon a time, Wad had been a man who thought deeply about right and wrong, and came to conclusions different from those that were common among the mages. That man had learned much about the workings of power, had acquired never-before-seen skills in gate magery. Above all, he had strength of will. When he set his mind to a purpose, he accomplished it. Yet was there any sense in which Wad was still that man? If he was, what purpose did he have now? Annonoe had her plans, and Wad helped her, as once he had accepted the purpose King Priard assigned to him, and then had become the willing tool of Bexoy in her plotting. When Wad came upon Danny North, he had acted according to what was left of the driving purpose of the man that Wad had once been. But when Danny North fought back and ate most of Wad's own gates, Wad had backed away, beaten. And now even this feckless boy in a faraway place had more purpose in his life than Wad. No, it was Wad who was feckless. Danny North had accomplished everything he set out to do. His mistakes had been mistakes of ignorance. Even Wad had not known what would happen to a great gate made of the captive outselves of other gate fathers, for the very good reason that few mages had ever had captive gates to work with. It was Wad who had no sense of responsibility. No, he could not lie to himself even in self-loathing. He had far too great a sense of responsibility. When he adopted someone, he took absolute responsibility for them, even when they were his captives, like Annonoe and her sons during their many months in prison, even when they were using him without conscience, like Bexoy, and, for all he knew, Annonoe. Wad especially took responsibility for his failures. Even when he had no idea what the right thing to do might have been, he blamed himself for not having done it. As he watched Annonoe manipulate everyone whose life touched Bexoy's, Wad understood quite clearly that Annonoe's purpose was dark and destructive, and she showed him over and over again why man-magery had always been feared and banned, why man-mages were destroyed whenever they were caught at their work. When her plotting came to terrible fruition, just as with Bexoy's, Wad would bear the terrible guilt of having helped her accomplish it. And yet he had no will of his own to give him the strength to say, "Enough, we will do no more." Or was it that his will was every bit as dark and evil as Bexoy's, as Annonoe's, as anyone's, but by letting them make the decisions he left himself an excuse? Yes, I share responsibility, but it was not my plot to do this terrible thing. These were the thoughts that he brooded over, whenever he was not actively doing something else, and sometimes even when he was. Watching Sed raise a tiny dust devil and whip it into such power that it became a blade that could cut through stone, Wad could not stop his mind from wandering back to his own troubles, his own mistakes. Where is the teacher who can help me know when to use my power, and whom to trust, and whose plans are worth fulfilling? I don't even know if my own former plans are the ones I should support, or if I made a terrible mistake 15 centuries ago. At that moment, on another world, Danny North took the gates that Wad had given to him, and why not, since he already had them, and used them to bring back a memory. Wad had no idea what Danny North was seeing, hearing, experiencing. But to Wad, it was all so clear and powerful that he could not escape from it. He lost all contact with the present moment. He could not see Sed or the ancient tree mage who was teaching him. He could not feel the sun on his back or the grass in the meadow where he lay. He could only see the old hermit Kawab, sitting in the mouth of his cave on the rocky plateau west of the Nile. Wad knew him instantly, knew that he had sought this man for a year once he discovered that he existed, knew that he had come to him for guidance, for the answer to his question. What was the question? He heard himself in memory, explaining why he was there. "She was possessed by a bellmage, and so I passed her through a gate to drive the bellmage away," Wad remembered explaining. "I knew enough to take her to a place far from him, so the bellmage didn't dive right back into her and rule her again as if she were his clant. Only it didn't work." Wad remembered now the terror of that realization. When he followed the Illyrian claw sister he had just freed from possession, she laughed at him. "Fool," she said. "Fool! You have no power over me!"
"What is this bell mage?" Wad remembered asking Kawab. "You are the last of the enemies of Set. You are the only one who can tell me why my gate did not drive this one away."
Kawab said nothing, did nothing. But a single tear streaked the thick dust on his face.
"What is it?" demanded Wad. "You know what this means, and it grieves you."
"It was no bell mage," said Kawab. "Not one of the Sutahites, the followers who were cast out of heaven with the dragon. It was Set himself, the dragon, the enemy of all souls. And your story tells me that he has gained the power to hold on to a body beyond the power of any man to drive him out."
"How do I fight him, then? How do I free this woman from him?"
"You can free her only by killing her," said Kawab. "And yet it will not harm Set himself. He cannot be killed. He will simply find another man or woman to possess, to control. And none can heal her. None can drive him out. He is the devil of devils."
"Don't tell me the dogmas of Christians," Wad insisted in that memory. "I came to you for the lore of the enemies of Set."
"They are the same," murmured Kawab. "What do you think John the Revelator was talking about in the apocalypse? War in heaven. That was the battle in the world of Duat, which Michael won, which Osiris won. It was the same war. Set was cast down to the earth, the great dragon, Satan, the devil, Baal, Bel, the enemy. Only fools think that truth disappears when the boundaries of belief are crossed. Set is the enemy, the slayer of Osiris, the possessor of souls. His followers are weak, pathetic creatures. You can drive them out with your gate magery. You can trick them, frighten them. They have no power except what people give them. But Set, and a very few of his disciples, they are the most terrible man-mages ever to live, or not live, here upon the earth.
I don't understand what you're talking about, Wad had answered him. What is Duat? Who is Michael or Osiris or whatever you call him? What was the war? And who is this Set, this great dragon, this Satan?
Over and over this memory played through Wad's mind, starting over whenever Danny North lost the thread of it back in the Egyptian desert on Middlegard. Again and again Wad heard himself ask and ask and ask, and yet for hours there was no answer. Danny North could never get him to the answer. This much consciousness of the present moment Wad retained. He reached to his own gates, the ones he had put under Danny's power, and he calmed them, slowed them, kept them tied to the memory. He tied them to his own inself, not taking back control of them, but giving them cleaner, clearer access to himself, to his memory. And through them, he was able to calm and soothe Danny North himself, stop him from losing the thread of the memory, help him hold to it, follow it, allow it to reach fruition. Finally, the voice of Kawab went on. The soft voice. The urgent voice.
"We are all creatures from another world."
Yes, from Westall, thought Wad who was, his old self there in the desert.
"Not from the world you call Westall or Mitherholm. And not from the world you call Middlegard or Middle-earth. Where do you think that name comes from? Terra stands in the middle between two worlds, the world of the mages who call themselves gods, and the world of all souls, Duat,
where every human comes from.
How can I come from there if I don't remember it? Said Wad, who was.
Because we are tied to the body. Ka and Ba, both parts of the soul, what you call in-self and out-self, they are tied to the body, to this hairless ape, this featherless biped, this tribe-dwelling louse-picker. And in that moment, all access to the ancient memory is lost.
Yet you remain yourself, for all the decisions of the body are made in the ka, the bonded mind, the in-self. And the body has no choice but to obey. New memories are made by ape and ka and ba together. A new self, a whole soul. It is why we were sent to Middlegard, to get this body, to learn to control it.
Then Wad, who was, asked the question that immediately occurred to Wad that is, lying unconscious in the meadow on Westall. In what part does the majory lie? Is it of the body or the in-self and out-self?
Both, answered Kawab. It is the body that gives shape to the powers inherent in the Ka and Ba. Because the Ka is rooted in the body, the Ba is free to roam and act out the will of the self. Because of the abilities inherited from your parents' bodies, your Ka and Ba expressed their powers as gate majory. Your Ba is divided into 10,000 parts, more than the Ba of any other man I have seen. A Ba like grains of sand. Because of this, you can make 10,000 gates, or 1,000 great gates. Because of this, you have the power to eat the gates of any other living mage, for you can take their gates into yourself and overwhelm them. But without this body, you are a Ka and Ba like any other.
And without my Ka and Ba? Asked Wad, who was.
Then the body is only a tool-making monkey, said Kawab. The natural man, a beast with lips that make words, but no mind to understand the deep meaning of anything.
It was clear to Wad, who was, and so it became clear again to Wad, that is. Now Kawab could explain who it was that Wad, who was, had failed to drive from the body of the beast mage he had tried to save.
In the world where every Ka and Ba was born, there was a war. Set was the evil one, and he persuaded many to follow him. But they lost the war and were cast out of Duat, down to earth, through a gate that only worked in one direction.
But you say we are all cast down to earth from Duat, said Wad, who was.
We are not cast anywhere, said Kawab. We are born one by one, created as body and Ka, with a Ba to do their bidding. The Ka joined deeply to the ape. We are born. This did not happen to Set and his followers, the Sutahites. The ones you call bell mages. They cannot become part of the ape, as we have.
And yet they take possession anyway, said Wad, who was. 1 or 10 or 100 bell mages or Sutahites, however many it takes to do it, they force their way into the body and rule it. We gate mages drive them out. Until now. Until this Set.
They only take possession as your man-mages do. They persuade the Ka and Ba to see the world the way they see it, and then to act within the world according to their will.
It's the same thing.
It is not the same thing, said Kawab. They feel nothing of the body. They only watch us feel it. They do not cause a single finger to curl, a single eyelid to close or open. They cannot taste the food we eat, or make the jaws chew. They have only the power that comes from our obedience.
Except for Set.
Not even him, said Kawab. Not even the great Set. He rides the ape brain like a man on horseback, but he never becomes the horse. Not even the way a beast mage becomes the heart beast? Asked Wad, who was. It is the ba that goes into the beast, but it is the ba of a mage who is attached to a living body of flesh and blood. The ba knows how to become a part of the body. The ba feels what the beast feels. Yet doesn't it also persuade rather than rule? The will of the mage is much stronger than most beast minds, said Wad, who was. But the strongest beasts can disobey the ba. Is that not true? It was true, or so Wad had heard from the beast mages. Even Set? Asked Wad, who was. Even he cannot bind himself inside the human body? Even when he rides the woman through your gate and laughs at you. He may have power to stay even through the gate, but he has not become the woman. She is still there, a ka and ba inside the body, but completely subject to him. Feeling her limbs move in obedience to the will of Set, hearing her mouth speak his words, powerless to stop him. And yet she is the one who owns the body. Set is and always will be an interloper. That's why he hates us all. That's why he wants to destroy us. Then he is all-powerful, said Wad, who was. Because he can take possession of the most powerful mages, and they can never get free of him, and must always do what he says. And he cannot be killed, but they can be killed. I did not say that, said Kawab, because that is not known. What we do know is this. The Ka and Ba of the Sutahites, these wandering souls, cannot be divided. Even when they possess a body such as yours, which caused your own Ba to divide 10,000 times, their Ka and Ba remains a single thing. What does that mean? Demanded Wad, who was frustrated with the strangeness of Kawab's teachings. It means that Set can only possess one person at a time. And most of the Sutahites are so weak that they cannot possess even one person. They have to join together, two or five or ten or more, in order to get control. They drive their victim mad with a chaos of voices, and even when his ka has retreated deep into the mind and the wanderers have control, they can hardly agree among themselves. No one of them is master. We think the man is mad because his behavior is not guided by a single will. Wad, who was, had seen this, and now he thought he understood. Set himself, this great dragon, can rule over a person by himself, needing no allies. He and the mightiest of the Sutahites. We call these devils by many names, but we don't know if any of them is the true name of the Master Sutahite. We only know that only a fool calls upon one of the great ones, for they can take possession far more easily when they are called. The fool who summons one believes that he is the master over the Sutahite, but he is deceived. It is the Sutahite who rules. So the pentagons they draw. Decorations only, said Kawab. They have no power, these fools who call themselves wizards and necromancers. The power that you Mither Mages have, those are real. But when a Master Sutahite has power over a man, then the Master calls many lesser Sutahites. They obey him then, and gain great power from their obedience to a master who rules a human body. They can easily influence the minds of many other people, so they think that the one possessed by the master is a great wizard with mighty powers. All illusion. So they are not as powerful as we think they are, said Wad, who was. I said, when a Master Sutahite has power over a man, but when he has power over a Mither Mage, then the mage will do his bidding and his powers belong to the Sutahite who rules him. Until a gate mage comes and drives out the possessor, said Wad, who was. Which works with every Sutahite,
but not with Set himself. Or so your story tells me. For if he has the power to resist you, there is no gate mage among all your kind who can drive him out.